Today on Seculo, he's outraged. Jack Smith is furious with the Trump immunity case judge, Eileen Cannon. We'll tell you why.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We've got new information. This is the case out of Florida, of course, involving those classified documents. Probably the longest case in all of the cases involving President Trump, because you've got classified documents, you've got a number of presidential records acts, a number of different laws that come into play. And Jack Smith doesn't like the fact that Judge Cannon in this case went to both sides, the prosecution and defense, and said to propose a jury instruction that she would then kind of mold into one instruction for the jury that they would ultimately get. And Logan, Jack Smith doesn't want the Trump defense team to have any role in this, but he specifically got angry with what instructions they would like to include.
I think we have to really break this down, because I don't think anyone really can understand what we're talking about here. We need to first go, yes, this is the classic case. This is like the original, one of the original cases you've heard about for years.
Right. There's just, this is the raid on Mar-a-Lago.
This is the raid on Mar-a-Lago. This just takes time. All of these things take a lot of time. So maybe you can explain to us in a bit more layman's terms what's happening right now. So they're going up there, and now there's an argument over who gets to hear the rules or what rules so get to be presented.
As you are preparing to select jurors, and you've gone through the grand jury process, so you're getting closer and closer to a court date, you have to come up with an instruction for the jury. What is the jury looking to find in this case while they sit there? So are they, what is the prosecution saying you did wrong? What is the defense saying they did not do, or that it wasn't wrong what they did? So currently right now, the proposed instructions would take into account the President Trump's view of the Presidential Records Act, which dictates how records created during a president's term must be handled and later archived. And that law does allow for some records to be considered personal property of the president, even some of the classified records. But the Smith team says that would distort the trial. They don't want that at all. They want it only based off the fact that he took national security documents, which we don't know that that's the case, that that was all that was found, nor does the judge at this point, because we know that there were thousands of documents taken. Some were given back. Others are being argued about. They still will be argued about. But I want people to understand here is that this is more lawfare. If you were in a criminal situation, okay, and the judge was saying, okay, to your attorney, put forward your idea for a jury instruction, and they're going to go to the prosecutors, put forward your idea for a jury instruction. They're going to mold that together to be as fair as possible to both the prosecution, but especially the defendant, because that's who is actually most protected in the American court system, is the defendant, because you're innocent until proven guilty.
Everyone's heard that before.
So if you took out your entire defense from the jury instruction, which is, do you believe them on this? Do you believe that they believe this? Imagine if they can do this to you, that the only jury instruction would be that you're guilty because you did X, Y, and Z, and it doesn't give another option for the jury. That would be, again, it's ultimate lawfare. It's absurd, but it's also been part, Logan, of this attack on this specific judge because she happens to be a Trump nominee. It's like, because she's a Trump nominee, she has to be disqualified. And that's why, again, we're going to keep explaining all of this to you, because this has huge impacts on how the case moves forward. And this is the case that will take the longest. If President Trump wins election, this case may never happen. Because, you know, once you're sitting
president, it can go away. Right. Yep. All right. So, hey, we just wrapped up our Life and Liberty Drive for March. Now we're in our Life and Liberty Drive for April, focusing more on liberty. And we're going to have an update with that. We've heard that O'Boyle case. You've heard about this, these whistleblower cases. We're going to have an update on that and really focus on what's being done to your constitutional liberties and what we can do to fight back against it. You can support the work of the ACLJ right now at ACLJ.org. Have your gifts doubled. Again, we're giving you more information about that coming up. Back.
back to Second Deal. And we are taking your calls on this because, listen, we know these are complicated legal issues when you're talking about jury instructions and the outrage of the jury instruction and, again, the back and forth here. But you can understand how important a jury instruction is because that's what the jurors first hear is you're here to decide whether or not you believe A or B. Do you believe that, for instance, that President Trump had this right? Or do you believe that ultimately you're after the trial and you've heard all the evidence that you believe that he did not have the right to take these documents or some of these documents? And Jack Smith tried to delete the fact that you could even find that he had at least the right to take some of them, even if not all of them, or all of them, because the law is kind of gray when it comes to the Presidential Records Act. So I think, again, this is the case that is going to take the longest because it involves classified documents. It will certainly not, I don't think there's any way this case comes to a full conclusion before the November election, which means it may become null and void. But that's why Jack Smith is pushing so hard, because a number of his cases have been delayed by the U.S. Supreme Court, by other cases, by local cases out of New York, by the AG, by the DA. I mean, think about Alvin Bragg, you don't hear as much about. I think he's just back in again on some issues. And the fact that, we'll get into it later, that the President Trump was right, as most of us said, that he was not going to have to do $500 million plus, and Letitia James lost, and it was about $140 million, and it's covered, and he's got the bond, and no one's seizing his assets.
And what we're seeing now is the poll numbers not either not change or positively affect President Trump. Now, I don't put a lot of credit in these polls. You're talking about a handful, you know, a few thousand people that are polled. But right now, one of the news stories, and they're covering everywhere right now, is that Trump is leading Biden in six of the seven swing states. Now, it is close. And like, I think no one is going to take back that this election at the end of the day will be close.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to hear from folks who are in these states. I'll name them for you. It's Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. If you're listening in those states right now, if you're a voter in one of those states but you're traveling right now, give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. So if the race was just between Biden and Trump, there was no third party, which we think there will be RFK, but that still remains to be seen if he'll qualify in all those states. Trump is up 5 points in Arizona. That's a little bit above the margin of error. In Georgia, it's very close, just plus one Trump, which we know Georgia is going to be a super battleground. As of now, though, I think depending on the economy and how Biden kind of proceeds with his campaign, that could also change significantly. He benefited a lot in Georgia on COVID and the ballots, drop-off ballots, all those kind of things. In Michigan, this is an interesting one. It's still within the margin of error, but it shows Trump up three. And again, these are the kind of states that Donald Trump won that changed the electoral map in 2016. These were almost impossible states for presidential Republican candidates to win. They would try hard. They would work hard. They'd sometimes get close, but usually by the end.
Very union-driven.
But he's done well amongst
liberal,
them.
Yeah, more traditional liberal states, because he's not done, coastal liberals.
But he's done better with the populism message, even with union voters. You go to North Carolina again. Trump now up 6 points. That's outside the margin of error. Nevada up four. That's outside of a margin of error usually, or right on the edge.
Yep.
And then you look at, let's see, Pennsylvania, which again, if you pull off Pennsylvania, Florida, Ohio, and those are earlier in the night states, I mean, you're on a pretty good track being elected. And right now with a 4 point lead. Again, in Pennsylvania, and that's a 3 point lead in Pennsylvania. In Wisconsin, you've got a dead tie at 46%. Wisconsin, of course, we know, it's a difficult state. It's got even more liberal. But what I think is important here, Logan, is like what you said. With all that he's faced, with all the negative attention, that people are realizing this is a complete 100% lawfare attack on President Trump, pulling out all the stops to try and hurt him in court, financially, legally, and almost kind of throw him off his game. And instead, voters are responding saying, this is disgusting that you're doing this to a leading presidential candidate, one who I may not even have loved, but now I'm thinking, you know what? You guys hate him so much. There must be a reason why, and I want to know why, and I think it's because he's willing to actually take you and that DC establishment on like he did the first time and pay the consequences like he's doing right now.
And that may be one of the moves. We're going to talk about the RFK run later in the show because that may be one of the things where people get so turned off by the Biden administration that they may not be on board to vote for President Trump, but they aren't going to vote for Joe Biden. And where could their allegiance go? Someone who at least they feel is not the Biden administration. So that'll be interesting. I'm going to be curious. Phone lines are jammed right now. We have a couple open. But when we do get to that segment later in the show, what your thoughts are on the RFK run as it stands right now. He had a lot of heat, kind of cooled, and then all of a sudden people are talking. And these poll numbers are actually showing a pretty interesting fact, which is he is pulling an equal number or close to an equal number from both President Trump supporters or Republicans and Democrats. Yeah, and depending on the state, obviously. But he's kind of said that when they've asked him in questions, they've said, hey, do you think you're going to pull more Democrats or Republicans? He's like, I think I'm going to pull somewhere like kind of equally. And the numbers right now are showing that. So that's going to be very interesting as we head towards November. Yeah, the last time we had a true spoiler like this would be, or someone you consider to be a spoiler, which he may not be if he's polling equally.
Right.
But you have, obviously, our mind goes to a Nader or your mind goes to Perot. Right. That's really the only two times that's happened. Perot had some real consequences.
Yeah.
Nader, maybe not quite as much.
Right. You want to go to the phones? Logan 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to him.
Yeah, Jamal is calling from North Carolina. You're on the air.
Hey, Jamal.
Hi, guys. Thank you for what all you do. God bless you all. Yeah, I'm calling from a swing state, but I've called probably last year, and I mentioned how the extreme left pushed me away from being a Democrat. Yeah. And I think that's when you guys are leading tickets to say how far they've gone from the common voter. One thing I told the screener was about you all's radical left section of your webpage. I know guys in my camp have been looking for a source to find out what all they're doing. So I just want to say to all your listeners out there, if you're looking for a good database, a good resource to find out what the radical left is doing against us, against Christians, against good coming American people, go to the J Secular website and go to the radical left section. Look that up. It has all a lot of information that'll be good for you all to have, and also don't forget to donate to J Secular team. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you so much. We've encouraged people. Yeah, it's ACLJ.org. I've always said this when we're doing our pitches is you got to go there and look at all the incredible free resources we provide.
Yeah.
News articles, people.
Issues,
petitions, ways to get involved, and just arming you with the facts and information you can use. I want to thank you, Jamal. Jamal calls from North Carolina, another place that's interesting because I think you probably get a completely different vibe based on where you are geographically within that state.
Right.
There are probably pockets kind of like a Florida or even, heck, most places have major cities, but I think North Carolina is even separated even more than that, which is districtly almost you have probably what would be far right areas and very left areas, and then probably there's somewhere in between. So it's probably hard to be on the ground in North Carolina and really be able to feel what's happening. If you're in Tennessee, sure, you may be able to say a Nashville, a Memphis. Those are going to go, the actual cities are going to probably go for Joe Biden presidency. But we all kind of know everywhere else in that area is going to go Republican or going to go conservative. North Carolina, it's kind of like spots throughout.
Yeah, it is. It is spots throughout. And it's not just all based off big cities and rural because you've got some rural that's kind of like mountain town, leftist, kind of hippie-ish. Right. And so you've got that going for you as well as kind of conservative business people in some of the bigger cities, like a Charlotte, where you get a lot of banking and things like that.
And then big education in a lot of these places.
You have the
universities, the Raleigh-Durham, Winston-Salem.
Right. I mean, again, it's one of those states that it was not really a swing state, but the Democrats have turned it into one based off demographics. And so it's one we have to take extremely seriously. It's like Georgia, which was not considered a swing state. Georgia used to be a state where all you needed to do was win the Republican primary and you were going to win statewide.
Yeah, even if the governor or even if or a senator was not necessarily always guaranteed to be Republican, it seemed to be that the presidential candidate was typically.
Yeah, and right now, if you're the Republican, if you were gubernatorial nominee or Senate nominee, you're almost guaranteed a win there.
Yeah.
Like we saw that with Stacey Abrams, just totally fell apart.
Couldn't do it.
So it's something with the presidential race that it also changes the turnout. Especially amongst minority voters. There's a lot more push to go into neighborhoods where people don't vote as often. and make sure that they vote either early or through, you know, other processes that Republicans have got to make sure that we do. And, you know, part of the work that we're doing at the ACLJ is fighting back on that election integrity. And we've been working on it with members of Congress since the last election on putting forward the correct legislation to correct the wrongs of 2020. And we've had some success there at the state level and at the federal level. Right now, we've got 18 cases against the Biden deep state in federal court. We've got 12 pending at the U.S. Supreme Court, including one that is a cert petition that the ACLJ would be arguing. So, I mean, we've got a ton of work at the ACLJ. We want you to become an ACLJ champion. We're only 175 short, Logan, of our 21,000 goal. So go to ACLJ.org, become an ACLJ champion today. We'll tell you more about it when we come back, but we need those champions to be the tip of the spear.
Welcome back to Seculo. Real quick, before we get to Jeff Balaban live in Israel, I did want to encourage you, if you're watching right now on YouTube, and a few thousand of you are right now, if you are brand new to this broadcast, brand new to this channel, hit that subscribe button. We appreciate it. And if you are, maybe you've already subscribed, which I appreciate, cut back to me. I want to give them, I want you to look, I'm in the palm of your hand right now. I'm going to ask you to hit that thumbs up. I'm going to ask you to comment. And right now, share it with your friends, however you can do that. But the easy way is to just hit that thumbs up. You'll see it right under the title, and to subscribe and throw in a comment. Because what we try to do here at the ACLJ, not only do we provide incredible content at absolutely no cost to you, the user, to get that content into new hands. So there's new people sitting with their phones right here or watching on their computer or however it is to get into the algorithms, into the feeds. We need the most kind of interactions possible. So please put your comments in. Please put your questions in. And just give us that thumbs up. Jordan, we're going to go now to Jeff Balaban live in Israel.
That's right. So, of course, you know Jeff oversees ACLJ Jerusalem for us. And again, Jeff, you're back inside Israel and in Jerusalem. And a couple things I wanted to talk to you about right off the bat is that Democrats are nervous in Washington, D.C. I hate talking politics when it involves human life at stake, but we have to, that the Israel-Hamas war could actually cost them in November if they don't up their anti-Israel rhetoric. So we saw more anti-Israel rhetoric come out from President Joe Biden the same day that Karine Jean-Pierre put out pretty pro-Israel rhetoric from the White House press podium. And I mean, if you play both back to back, you'd be thinking this isn't the same White House or same communications team. But so they're still trying to like play both sides. But ultimately, it's obvious they are concerned that a significant part of their base is very anti-Israel, and they're going to continue to push this at least aggressive rhetoric against Israel.
Well, Jordan, you know, when you started, you had the decency, because you're decent, to say that it's uncomfortable to talk about domestic political concerns when we're talking about life and death. And it really does drive me a little bit crazy, Jordan, that you see the media in America talk about this as though, of course, we all understand that the Democrats are concerned, especially about Michigan and Minnesota, where they have heavy Muslim, very anti-Semitic, very anti-Israel populations that they want to have vote for them, that those populations are making a lot of noise and yelling about how Biden's, quote, too pro-Israel, even though he's far from it. And so the fact that the media treats these domestic concerns as though it's natural that a political party, that the president of the United States, would actually sacrifice the very existence, because that's what this is. This is an existential threat to the state of Israel. This is global anti-Semitism against the Jewish people, that the president is chiming in and inciting that violence and inciting that hatred and inciting these, essentially, you know, there's a term blood libel, as you know, which was created about for centuries, where they would make up stories about Jews that would incite people to kill Jews. That's what's going on now. They're making up stories. The president should be saying, we know that Israel always tries to minimize civilian or non-combatant casualties better than any country in the world, but he's not. Instead, he's saying he's outraged. It's, Jordan, it's actually terrifying. Sitting here in Israel, it's terrifying.
Jeff, it doesn't comport with what his own press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, said yesterday at the White House press podium. I mean, I want to play the whole bite for people because it was a pretty direct focus on what Hamas has done wrong and why they are actually responsible for some of, or if not the majority of, these civilian casualties. Take a listen. I wouldn't usually say take a listen to Karine Jean-Pierre.
It's pretty wild.
But take a listen. I mean, this is the White House press secretary for President Biden, and then we'll tell you what President Biden had to say. Bite one.
Look, Hamas should not be operating out of hospitals. We have said that. We've said that over and over again. And putting civilians at risk. That's what we're seeing. And we are concerned by how Hamas appears. They appear to have been able to reconstitute in a hospital so quickly. So we've always also made clear that we continue to support Israel's right to defend itself. We have urged Israel to take every step to avoid civilian casualties. And this just points to how challenging Israel's military operation is because Hamas has intentionally embedded themselves into civilian infrastructure, into these hospitals. But we've been very clear, like this is, we also have to call out Hamas here. They are operating out of hospitals. That's what they're doing. They're embedding themselves in civilian population. This is what they're doing.
You know, so Jeff, from that statement alone, pretty strong from Karine Jean-Pierre, but and I like your reaction to it, but then I'm going to go and read some of what Biden had to say, but first your reaction to that statement.
Look, they have, first of all, you're right, Jordan. It's a little bit surprising. She certainly is no friend to Israel. Personally, even before she became press secretary, she has a history that's pretty grim when it comes to Israel. But I think they're triangulating. First of all, I would say she didn't get the memo because Biden certainly went in a different direction, being outraged. But I think that they're trying to triangulate. They're all triangulating about their domestic concerns, which is if they know they can't stop Israel from doing something, how do they want to present it? How do they want to present it? Is it, this is, you know, you have to allow Israel some slack to do some things, or do we just gonna wag our finger at Israel? I'm not sure they've figured out how to triangulate it because they are trying to keep Minnesota and Michigan. By the same token, thank God, Jordan, the vast majority of America still knows who's right and who's wrong in this conflict, who's good and who's evil, and still supports Israel. So they have to also realize that they're gonna go way off the skids if they go too far to the pro-jihadi side.
Yeah, I mean, because this is President Biden. We don't have the sound, but he was at Tuesday at an event, and he said, quote, incidents like yesterday, which was an attack by Israel that supposedly killed 7 aid workers in Gaza, and we're not exactly sure about all the facts there. Israel has apologized, said they're looking into why that happened, how that occurred. But we also know that a lot of this UNRWA workers have also got ties to Hamas, and so you've got issues there. But what they've said is and President Biden says, Israel has not done enough to protect civilians, and he went on to say that the investigation of the strike, it has to be swift, bring accountability, and its findings must be made public. Why not say that about the Hamas officials that were killing babies at kibbutzes in Israel? How about we get swift findings and justice on that, Jeff, before we worry about maybe one military incident that unfortunately is part of armed conflict in any part of the world. And the U.S. is certainly responsible for some of those unfortunate events as well when we are in armed conflict.
Well, I'll remind you as well, just a couple of weeks ago, some aid packages came in and the parachutes didn't open and five Palestinians were killed in Gaza by American aid falling on them. Israel didn't say, we're outraged that you killed these civilians, right? Israel understood that America was trying to do what it thought was right and try to help people, even though I disagree with that aid. I don't think it's humanitarian aid. I think it goes directly to Hamas and the terrorists. But Israel didn't condemn Biden for those accidental deaths. It's outrageous that Biden's condemning Israel. Israel is doing an unbelievable job. It still has, by far, the fewest non-combatant casualties in any recorded warfare in history. And this is after, let's remind everybody, the reason we have so many Arabs pushed into one small area is because America is leading the charge to not allow the population to be transferred, which happens in every other armed conflict on the globe. Jeff, including to this.
I hate to cut you off because I love hearing from you. We are running out of time. We got 5 seconds here real quick in this half hour. I just want to tell you all, support the work of the ACLJ right now. We're in our Life and Liberty Drive, focusing on liberty around the world. We need your support. ACLJ.org. We're going to come back in less than a minute, so do not go anywhere.
Keeping you informed and engaged now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. We're going to take more of your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110.
Logan, say something real quick. Yeah, a lot of people are just joining us right now on YouTube and Rumble, and they're curious about the main topic. They see the headline, the outrage, Jack Smith furious with Trump immunity judge. Maybe we could just give a brief one-minute synopsis. We talked about that a lot in the first half hour. Yeah. But if people are just joining us right now.
So when you're preparing for trial, one thing the judge asks to do is prepare jury instructions that the judge will deliver to the jury. So what is the jury trying to find? What's their job here? And so you ask both sides to present, and then the judge kind of puts it together, and then ultimately get both sides to agree, okay, we're okay with these jury instructions. And there was a filing on Tuesday night from Judge Cannon asking both sides to propose jury instructions that would take into account both Trump's view of the Presidential Records Act, which dictates how records created during a presidential term must be handled and later archived, and it even allows for some records to be considered personal property of the president, and Smith's team that said that if you allow that, it distorts the trial because we're saying that everything he took is not covered by the Presidential Records Act. But remember, the president can declassify documents, so he obviously that will be something potentially that President Trump argues in court. So you can't just have a one-sided jury instruction that says the only thing you're supposed to find is how guilty is Donald Trump based on what Jack Smith said. You have to also provide the jury about what Donald Trump's legal team is going to argue in response to the prosecutors. And so Jack Smith, in a typical move, wants it his way or no other way. And again, he's gone after this judge multiple times. Ultimately, he should have a say. The Trump team should have a say so that the jury, even though I don't think this case should even be moving forward, but so that the jury ultimately understands what each side is arguing.
Yeah, and what our producer Will just said is that these instructions aren't even handed out until the end of the trial.
Right. This comes at the very end. So you go through a whole trial, and then the judge says, okay, this is what you need when you go back and deliberate. This is what you're trying to figure out. Do you believe that President Trump was doing this in good faith under the Presidential Records Act or in bad faith taking classified documents? And there'll be a whole list of other things too. But what I point out in this case as well, it's the most complicated case of all of these. Georgia got very complicated because of the whole Fannie Willis situation, the appeal now on Fannie Willis and kicking out the special counsel by the judge. So that one's kind of been delayed as well. But this one we always knew was probably not going to be able to be even close to being finished before people started voting for the actual president of the United States, not just the primary being over, but the president. And this, again, shows you why it keeps getting delayed.
Yeah, I also wanted to take a quick second and talk about an update in the Garrett O'Boyle situation. Yes. That is something we got about a minute and a half here, and Secretary Pompeo is joining us next. But Jordan, give us an update on that. And obviously, we are in the middle of the liberty part of the Life and Liberty Drive, and I think that's very important when you hear what's happening in real time to Garrett O'Boyle, the whistleblower.
You know, Garrett O'Boyle was suspended without pay. He is an FBI whistleblower that we represent, and our case has been able to proceed, and we have just filed our merits brief at the D.C. Circuit in a defense of our client.
Today.
So again, today. That has just been filed today. I just want to make sure you understand that. So that case, as you know, we've been talking about for months, but we first had to file it at the administrative court level, but after you do it there in Washington, you jump to Court of Appeals, and that's where we are now. So that brief is there now, which means after briefing, we will get a trial date, and this is to protect American whistleblowers. Both sides of the aisle, if they see something wrong, they should be able to blow the whistle without fear that they will be fired without pay. And his security clearance has been revoked, which means if he tries to get another job in the intelligence private world, he can't because he's lost his security clearance. So his effectiveness, ability to provide for his family has been severely limited. And we are able to represent him like we do other clients. at no cost.
At no cost. We can't do it without ACLJ supporters like you and ACLJ champions. We broke huge records last month. Hit over 20,000, 20,500, 20,800 brand new people that said, I want to be an ACLJ champion. Someone that supports the work of the ACLJ each and every month. So our goal now in the next few days, we only have 175 people. That's how amazing you are to get to 21,000. So become an ACLJ champion today. Mike Pompeo joins us next.
Welcome back to Seculo, and it is great to be joined by a senior member of our team, a senior counsel for global affairs, former CIA director, and former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to work through these issues with us when we talk about what is going on, again, with internationally and even domestically as well. First question I've got for you, Secretary Pompeo, is you've got a great new article up at ACLJ.org that exposes the corruption at the border and how our taxpayer dollars are funding it. Can you explain to folks, I want them to check out the article at ACLJ.org, which just posted on Friday, it's brand new, but explain to our the people watching and listening to the show how that's happening.
Well, thanks for asking. It's an important issue because I think everyone listening and watching needs to understand that it's their money that is now aiding these illegal migrants to come into our country. It happens through a complex web of international organizations, charities, human rights organizations, but in the end is coming through grants that come from the United States Department of State. To get into the weeds a bit, the International Organization of Migration is a UN organization that says they're for humane migration. But the truth is they're providing cash payments, interest-free loans to help migrants make the journey from South and Central America to the U.S. southern border, prepaid credit cards. This is crazy stuff. And the underwriter for that UN organization is the State Department, the Bureau of Population Management. So U.S. taxpayer dollars ending up in the hands of illegal migrants coming across our southern border. This is ludicrous. This is dangerous. And I hope that the American people will demand that President Biden and his administration stop using taxpayer money to fuel the illegal migration flow into our country.
You know, again, check the article out. It's ACLJ.org from Mike Pompeo because, again, it just shows you how there's all these different ways these groups are taking money to affect what's happening in this corruption at the southern border, which also explains why they don't want to solve the problem at the southern border because in a kind of gross way, they're making money off of it. Second question to you, Secretary Pompeo, is to make that worse is that we just don't know who's coming in. So are we funding a national security threat against ourselves? I mean, that's what it feels like. It's like we're funding a threat against ourselves because we have this total lack of knowing exactly who's crossing in, and then they disappear inside a very large United States of America.
Jordan, we've talked about this a little bit before. So when you think about the fact that there are now some 6 to 8 million people that have come across our southern border in the last just handful of years, and we don't know where they are, nor do we know who they are, nor do we know if they just came because they truly just want a better life or because someone sent them. We can see that they're originating now in China and in places that are our adversarial nations. There's going to be a bad day, Jordan. You can write it down. Even just a tiny fraction of that number of people are bad actors, folks who come here with dangerous intent. Even if it's 1% or 2%, someday we will wake up and find that we have permitted, and indeed, as I described earlier, we have helped fund illegal migration into our country in a way that presents a terror threat and a threat to our republic. The national security risk associated with folks coming into our country, some of whom are already on our terror watch list, some of whom we've not yet identified, is very real and very serious and absolutely growing each and every day.
Secretary Pompeo, obviously I follow you on all social media platforms, and I saw an interesting post on X that you gave that read, you know, sort of like this: Biden has listened to the loudest voices on the radical left, the pro-Hamas wing of the party, and now the administration is negotiating on Hamas's behalf. I just kind of want you to elaborate on that, because that is obviously quite an accusation, if you will, to a lot of people. A lot of people go, okay, well, maybe that's going too far, but I have a feeling you have a reason of why that's not going too far.
I'll give you just the last 48 hours. The Israelis conduct a strike, and it tragically kills innocent civilians who were there to try and help feed folks in Gaza who don't have enough protein, enough food. That's a tragedy. It's the president of the United States goes out and said that he can't understand how this could happen. But of course, we all know that when you have an aggressive attack on Israel and they have the duty to go crush the folks who killed over 1,000 Israelis, that, you know, mistakes happen. It's complicated. And as hard as we tried as Americans when I was a soldier and our military does today, you know, this kind of thing just happens in conflict zones. And yet the president of the United States goes out and says, oh my gosh, the Israelis are doing this in a way that is indecent. The negotiations that are taking place to get back those hostages, the negotiations that are taking place to have a resolution to this conflict, you have now empowered Hamas. You have actually generated leverage at the negotiating table for terrorists funded by Iran. There's no other way to describe that, but other than to say that the Biden administration is now conflicted. They are now, they want Israel to be safe and sound, but they're not prepared to tell the Israelis, go finish the task of actually accomplishing that. And so in the end, they're negotiating to help this government, right? Hamas would consider itself the government of Gaza. Well, I consider them terrorists who raped and killed young women and children. And we ought not be empowering them, encouraging them, and defending them when, in fact, every civilian death that takes place in Gaza is a result of what they did, what Hamas did, what Iran did, not what the Israelis are trying to achieve to provide security not only for themselves, but create a living set of living conditions in Gaza that one day can free Palestinians and Arabs living in Gaza, in addition to make sure that Israel is safe and secure.
Yeah, we got a call coming in, and I think, you know, we wouldn't usually take one with Secretary Pompeo, but I think it's right on point with Joanne in Ohio on line 3. And Joanne, you're not talking to just Jordan and Logan, but also Secretary Pompeo. So go ahead with your question.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm honored. My thing is after the Afghanistan debacle, the withdrawal, Saigon, whatever you want to call it, didn't we intentionally target a man and kill him and his family who happened to be an aid worker? We apologized. We said we would investigate. I've never heard any results of any investigation. Why is this any different? I mean, these things happen, just like Secretary Pompeo just said. I mean, we targeted that man. This wasn't even a targeted thing. We're talking out of both sides of our mouth, and it's frustrating.
I believe that instance, it was someone who, it was a mistake, it was an error, and of course, we did apologize. There were things that happened that way.
Pompeo, this is the horrors of war. I mean, it's why you do everything you can to prevent war, but unfortunately, sometimes, like after an attack like October 7th, war is the only option, and when you go to war, mistakes do happen because it's human beings conducting it.
It's a great question. And her point, her core point, that this the hypocrisy of the Biden administration calling out the Israelis for what was clearly a tragic accident is readily apparent. No, the United States, not just in Afghanistan, but in Iraq, during World War II, right? When conflict takes place, you know, errors happen. People think they see things that they didn't. They target things that they didn't understand. Our efforts are always to do three things. One, do everything we can to possibly avoid that, but also make sure we have rules of engagement that protect our servicemen and women as well. Second, we want to go, if we figure out we made a mistake, we want to own the mistake. The Israelis have said, yep, we screwed up. We made a mistake. I'm sure they're both heartbroken, saddened, and apologetic. But, you know, they've got a real mission to continue to prosecute. And then finally, we as the United States should be very careful about throwing stones. We do our level best every day. We fight in a way that is decent, consistent with all the relevant resolutions. We do it right, but we know, too, there's always risk when you're conducting warfare. And civilians that are in a conflict zone know that they're in a conflict zone. These folks sounds like they did everything they could to stay out of harm's way. And sadly, there was a tragic incident.
Secretary Pompeo, it's always great to get your insight on these tough questions like that. And also on the politics of war, unfortunately, and what we're seeing now from the Biden administration moving closer and closer to what is an anti-Israel position, or trying to have it both ways, which is, again, I want to remind people, we have Secretary Pompeo on our team because of our ACLJ supporters, Logan.
Absolutely. I do want to encourage you to go to ACLJ.org, read that new article. A new post come up from Secretary Pompeo all the time. But yeah, we couldn't be able to, we weren't able to do any of this without your support here at the ACLJ. So we encourage you, go to ACLJ.org. Like we said, we are only a little over 100 away from hitting our goal of 21,000 ACLJ champions. That's people who agree to support the ACLJ. Obviously, you can cancel anytime each and every month on a recurring automatic basis. Do that right now. We really would encourage you to do that. Go to ACLJ.org. Hey, we are heading into the next segment, and we are going to be discussing, among anything, sort of the rise or the current status of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and his presidential bid that is happening right now, and some of the, let's say, marketing that's going on to sort of the more conservative evangelicals, including statements from people like Franklin Graham over the weekend. We're going to talk about over the last few days. We're going to talk about that. But I'd love to hear from you, your thoughts. We have a few lines open. 1-800-684-3110. If it's busy, keep trying. 1-800-684-3110. We're going to talk about some of the polls. We're going to talk about some of the new social media posts he's made, some of his presidential promises that are controversial.
In politics, too.
And all that coming up. Yep, so do that. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. As we head into this last segment of the broadcast, I would encourage you, please, to go support the work of the ACLJ. None of this could happen. Our legal work, our media work, none of it without you. We'll be right back in just a moment. So stay. If you're watching online, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Seculo. We're back. We're going to talk a little bit about the current kind of move happening from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. You've heard him as sort of the independent, originally was running as a Democrat,
Yep. Gets
President Biden, got a lot of traction that kind of went away, and now running as an independent. You probably have been getting a lot of marketing from him. I know I have over the last few days, last few weeks, and I found it very interesting that you even had people like Franklin Graham, who obviously has been a pretty big supporter of President Trump.
I would still say it.
Still say yes.
Yeah.
But making statements, because I do believe that that team, whoever's running his social media team, whoever's booking him as a guest on a lot of these talk shows, is making a concerted effort to talk to Christian conservatives. So can we put up what RFK said, or not RFK, what Franklin Graham said? He said, I haven't met Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but I wouldn't agree with all of his politics. I'm sure he wouldn't agree with mine either, but he doesn't beat around the bush and he comes across as honest. I appreciate that. Honesty is important. It's a biblical character trait. And it's something that's missing in much of politics today. And then he said last night on CNN, he warned America that President Biden is a serious threat to democracy because he's weaponizing the federal agencies. He said President Biden is the first candidate in history, the first president in history, that has used federal agencies to censor political speech or censor his opponent. And I believe he's 100% correct. So that is a big, pretty blanket statement coming from one of the biggest leaders in Christian conservatism, Franklin Graham, son of Billy Graham, you know, runs all of those enterprises. That is pretty interesting to see. You also saw over Easter him make many videos and comments about his relationship with God, what it looks like, what it means to him. And I think what is interesting also, he doesn't come at it and just say, yeah, I'm a Christian. He comes at it with sort of a bigger, you know, picture approach, but one that felt honest. We see the polls really generate the fact that he is drawing from both Joe Biden supporters and from President Trump supporters, or really what you'd say probably Democrats and Republicans who feel like they don't want to vote for either of those candidates. That is a pretty interesting moment in this. And we can see, Jordan, that sometimes leading to what you would consider a spoiler. But right now, the percentage he's polling and what it looks like is that he's really polling from both sides.
It's interesting. So when you look at him, you say it's not really a traditional spoiler. So, I mean, Franklin Graham can kind of put out that tweet about, listen, I don't agree with a lot of what he says, but I do like the fact that he's not afraid of speaking his mind, like when he said that President Biden's a serious threat to democracy because he's, quote, weaponizing federal agencies and the first candidate in history that has used federal agencies to censor political speech or censor his opponent. And Franklin Graham says, I believe on that point, he's right. But then when you do look at the polls, Logan, you realize, you know, when he's not like, it's like he's significantly hurting either Biden or Trump, because when he takes away, it's pretty equal. Now, if we get into a very close race and in one state he takes away a little bit more than another, that could still be a spoiler.
Yeah,
so we're still at a point where he could be a spoiler, but when we're looking at it kind of from 10,000 feet right now, it's not like he's clearly hurting one candidate over the other.
Yeah, and I think
which is why you don't see either candidate really acknowledging
it. Yeah, I think President Trump has said, I think he's a kind of a good guy. I think there's a comment saying, I think I like him. I like what he has to say. And Joe Biden has virtually, I think he has just ignored his campaign. Now, we know that there is going to be a huge fight to get him on all 50 states and whether the Democrats try to fight that as well. But you have his positions, ones you wouldn't agree with, like his position on life. His position on life is, and he put this out, by the way, this is not digging up stuff. All of it, which again, you can give him a little credit. Go to his Instagram page, you'll see it. He put a video saying, well, how do you feel about life? I feel, he said, I mean, and I kind of quote, he said, I believe every abortion is a tragedy. However, I really don't believe there should be any laws restricting it because I believe in full bodily autonomy. So that was an interesting statement. Again, playing a bit both sides here. We did see a campaign promise that on day one, he would pardon Edward Snowden. What is interesting about that, and we've said this, is you can make a lot of campaign promises when you really have very, very little chance of winning. And he has to know, even if he's saying, I know I can win, he ought to say that. And look, who knows? But the odds are very unlikely.
Well, let's go through the top seven battlegrounds again. We did it without RFK. Yep. We showed you that Trump was ahead in all but one. If you put RFK in the mix with Biden and Trump, in Arizona, it stays exactly the same, plus five Trump, 39, 34 Biden. It is, again, the numbers go down a little bit, but it's still plus five Trump. In Georgia, it's plus three Trump. That actually goes up a couple for Donald Trump. In Michigan, it goes to plus two Trump. That's one less than if RFK wasn't in it. So it goes from a plus two instead of plus three. So, I mean, you're talking about, you know, a plus one. These are all within margin of error. If you go to North Carolina, interestingly enough, where you've got Biden at 43 and 49 Trump, if you throw in RFK, it's, again, it goes up to plus eight Trump. So in North Carolina. So he actually does, RFK is hurting, you know, Biden more there. But then you go to Nevada, about the same, plus four Trump, with RFK in it, plus three Trump, plus four Trump without him in it. You go to Pennsylvania, plus three Trump with him in it, plus three Trump without him in it. And Wisconsin, instead of it being tied at 46, it gives Biden a three-point lead. So that would be, again, the only state that RFK is hurting Trump in.
In the swing states.
In the swing states would be Wisconsin, and that point plus three, it was in a state that was tied in the other poll, is still within a margin of error. So right now it's really unclear that he's hurting either side. It might be more state, like I said, Logan, state to state it could have an influence, and that's why you got to like even go to the micro level. The macro level may not tell us the story here.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go ahead and take some quick phone calls. Vicky, who's calling in North Carolina, been a hold a long time. Vicky, you're up.
Thanks for holding, Vicky.
Yes, sir. You just had asked about swing states. I'm in North Carolina, obviously, and I just want to say everybody I know in my family will be voting for Trump.
There you go, Vicky. That's from North Carolina. Again, North Carolina, a very split state in many different districts. We appreciate you calling in and supporting our work. We really appreciate that. Watching on Roku. Let's quickly go to Julie, who's calling in Oregon, on line two. Julie, you're up.
Hi, yes. Thank you for your work. There's been a lot of evidence coming forward with regard to still the 2020 election, where we were supposed to believe that Biden got the most votes of any president. He is currently under criminal investigation and members of his family. He's got the lowest rating of any U.S. president in history currently. And so when we're talking about swing states and the various percentages, it's just so very hard to believe that they're that close.
I think it is true that, Julie, the polls are still a very small group of people that are polled in general in these things. You got to remember, this is, I think they said this one was roughly 4,000 people that were polled.
4,200 total.
600 per state. So you're not talking about a huge sample size, but that is what it is. Thank you for calling. I did want to tell you in this last minute, we are right now kicking off really what I say is the Liberty side of the Life and Liberty Drive for the month of April. We can't do any of this credible work, whether that is supporting the whistleblowers, whether that is having on Secretary Pompeo to give you incredible commentary, whether that is us talking about battling the Biden deep state in federal court. We now have 18 cases currently going on with that. And our goal right now, because of your incredible support, is to now hit 21,000 ACLJ champions. And we're close. We are only 175 short, probably less than that since we've been on the air. 175 from when we started this broadcast. We can't do that without you. So go to aclj.org, 171 away. There you go, added four. We appreciate you doing that. Single donations, incredibly important, are really what keeps the trains going. But if you can become an ACLJ champion, opt in. We'll talk to you tomorrow.